Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. We are in our Winter Drive 2020. Yay!
It's a little different this time, V, isn't it? We're doing it predominantly in Community Voices. And I want to remind you, because it is the drive, that you can go to nprillinois.org. Make a gift to support the public radio that you love to listen to here, or you can also call 206-9847.
Today, we're starting off with you trying to get to know some more of our neighbors as we fundraise, but also want to continue to help you get to know everybody in the community so we can get a little bit closer right now. Today, we have some of our great donors with us. We have David and Mary Caroline Mitchell. Welcome.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
At this time of year, December, you've always been a big supporter of a particular program that you like to hear on the air, and that's the A Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols. How did you get so interested in this particular program?
We've been listening to that on the radio since the late 70s when they first started broadcasting it. I'm a musician as well as several other things. In my past, I have greatly admired choral music in the English tradition, and that's what this is, being that it's in Cambridge. Over the years, it's just become something that we do on Christmas Eve morning.
I've sung in a choir for over 65 years, and I love the sound that is most wonderful to me in the world is the sound of the human voice singing, and particularly in a historic building like King's College, Cambridge, the sound is just amazing. When we had smaller children around, we weren't sitting there listening like we do now. It was just background. We've always been so supportive of hearing it live.
Why do you think people in Springfield should get a chance to hear this music? What do you think that brings to everybody's home during the holidays?
Well, I like to think back to when this service started, which was first performed in King's College for the college community in 1918, right at the end of World War I. The chaplain, Eric Milner White, had seen action on the front. He wanted to bring a celebration of Christmas that maybe was quieter and more peaceful and reflective of the losses that people have experienced, but still bring joy. I think that this year particularly, it'll be a great time to have people listen to this service that is actually happening live over in England and brings the world together because people listen through BBC all over the whole world.
And it will be live here on 91.9 UIS from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Christmas Eve. Mary Caroline and David Mitchell helped make that happen. So we really appreciate you joining us and doing that again. Do I understand correctly that you actually went to see it live one time?
We did in Christmas of 2015. We had talked about it for several years. And so we decided, you know, we did a little research on it to see what you actually had to do to get in. Decided that 2015 was the year. I can describe to you what it took to get in.
Sure, I'm curious because it's easy to turn on the radio. What does it take?
You've got to realize that since millions of people are listening all over the world, it's not an original thought that people want to go to Cambridge on Christmas Eve and actually get into the chapel to be hearing it live. And every year that we sat around our dining room table listening with our special Christmas rolls that we do every year, we kept saying, next year in Cambridge. But it finally happened. And so we got to Cambridge about a day before the service and went to King's College to see how big the line was, because some people actually camp out there to get, it's like a rock event or something. So we asked them, what time do we need to get in line to assure that we'll actually get into the chapel?
There's a gate into the college commons, and you have to get in line there before they give you a piece of paper that says you can get into the carol service. The gate opens at 7 a.m. And we were told that if you arrived at 4 a.m., you probably could have a place in the line because many people are turned away. I think 600 was the limit.
Yeah.
So that's what we did, actually. Got up at 3 a.m. and walked over from our hotel.
It was dark and cold.
Yes. It was not raining yet.
Yet. That's another part of the story.
So we had gear for rain. And I guess it's kind of like the experience of tailgating or lining up for a rock concert. It was a very interesting experience being in line because there's people there from all over the world. A lot of them are musicians. Everybody loves the service of Lessons and Carols. Everyone's excited to get in. And I'm happy to say that by us going at 4 a.m. like we did, we were in the first group of 20 to enter the chapel. And so we got our favorite seat.
How was it different seeing it live versus what people hear on the radio?
First of all, you have this feeling from having been with all these people. We were with students. The man right behind us was a pianist from Italy with his parents who couldn't speak English. I learned later that Mary Chapin Carpenter was down the line because people are tweeting while they're in line. The thing that was different is we got to hear the organ concert that happens before it goes live on the air. Sitting across from us this particular year was the famous composer John Rutter, who composes church music that is often performed at Nine Lessons and Carols. We recognized him because David has been at a workshop with him before. So that was really meaningful. And then to feel the light in those beautiful church windows as it gets dark, because it starts at 3 p.m. and by the time we leave, it's dark outside. Those were all really special feelings for us.
Especially being in the architectural space of the chapel, which we had been in several times before on other trips. Being there with the choir was a very moving experience. And friends asked when we got back, was it what you expected? And I said, it exceeded our expectations.
We kept saying, this is a once in a lifetime experience, except we want to go back.
They're going to do it this year, but there won't be anybody in the congregation. It'll be just the choir because of the virus.
So many things are different this year because of that. And we are talking with Mary Caroline and David Mitchell as part of our holiday version of Community Voices, and talking about a special we'll have on Christmas Eve, a festival of Nine Lessons and Carols. Join us as you do every year. This will be live from 9 to 11 a.m. that morning. Fascinating program that we've learned more about. We are in Pledge Drive, and that's one of the reasons we're here. If you haven't, please go to nprillinois.org or go to 206-9847, and you can help make great radio happen, like Mary Caroline and David do with the Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols. They help support it so that we get that program on each year, and that's very helpful. You can join them by making a donation now.
I also want to mention how if we didn't have National Public Radio, we wouldn't have this. I was so interested in the history of the service and how it ended up being broadcast in the United States. My son, who lives in Minneapolis, helped me get connected with Nicholas Nash, who was the person at Minnesota Public Radio that came up with the idea in 1979 that this BBC broadcast could actually be broadcast to the United States. His dad had loved listening to the long playing record of the service, and he had become interested in it. I actually had coffee with him and found out he knows more than anybody about the service. He is still alive, I think. We are also grateful to Brad Swanson at WSSU at the time, or WSSR, who said that we were one of the first stations to pick it up. And the other really interesting part is when we first started listening, it was beamed by satellite. And some of the time it would go out, and I would always record it on a cassette tape just so that we could listen again, because sometimes it would cut out. It was not as great technology as we have today. The other thing I'd like to say is that without it being broadcast all over the United States, we wouldn't be connected with our family, because our families now sit around their tables like we do at our table on Christmas Eve when they can't be with us. And this year that'll even be more meaningful. And we get pictures of them sitting there. The kids don't look too happy to be sitting there, but they pose for a picture for the grandparents. So we really appreciate what NPR and that our local station continues to carry it. I know the members of our Westminster Presbyterian Church choir all listen. We always send out emails to our friends to ask them to join us for this special celebration.
Well, we continue to appreciate your support. And just hearing you talk about that, I remember being in high school. I was very involved in choir. And this was one of the things we would watch to get us to prepare to perform. So it's made an impact on my life. And I'm so glad to see that our programming that we're able to broadcast because of you all and so many others like you all has brought so much joy to your life. I really enjoy that.
You mentioned how this year is going to be unique. I can't imagine any other year like this. How are you coping with coronavirus?
We just experienced a very disappointing plan having to not happen because we have our family that lives outside of Washington, D.C. because they school from home and work from home. They came up with the idea that maybe they could come a week early. Part of the family, the day before they were going to come, I think Springfield hit the highest spot ever, and everybody was told they should stay home, even though both families had self-quarantined for 2 weeks, including teenage kids, so that we would be safe. We are being good citizens. We are deciding we're having, even our family that lives in town will not be with us. We are just holding in our hearts the memories of other times.
It's difficult to create a new tradition. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do at ours, but we've made the same decision to, you know, keep in the houses that we always are in. And maybe we'll be setting up something like this, video monitoring, so we can talk to each other. You mentioned teenagers quarantined for a while. Do you think it's the same sort of difficulty for all of us being isolated, or do you think it might be tougher for teens and younger folks?
Those of us that have a lot of life experience, maybe, we know that things will get over and that we'll survive them. But for younger people, they wonder if this is going to be what the rest of their life is going to be like, and what it's going to be like to miss your friends when you're 15 is really different than when you're in your 70s.
Well, and we're going to have some Zoom meetings with everybody. Over the years, I have developed a thing that I like to do with the grandkids, and I make pancakes for them with special designs on them and so on. They call them paw cakes. We're going to have a special Zoom paw cake event over the weekend. That ought to be a lot of fun because we have kids in the Washington, D.C. area, the New York City, and then Minneapolis and here. Well, that's one way we can all get together, at least see each other.
And they can't ever wait to see how Grandpa is going to flip a pancake that's as big as his griddle, because they give him a design they want, like it used to be a truck or a house, and he draws it in chocolate on the pan and then puts the batter on top and then he flips it over. And so the kids develop the designs and Grandpa renders them in pancakes.
The event, especially with one of the boys, is to see how big I can make it and still flip it over. And so I've gotten it so big that I have to have two spatulas to flip it over. We've had a lot of fun with that.
Sounds like delicious art.
Our family that lives in New York City is a blended family, Jewish and Christian. Our daughter-in-law, who is Jewish, always wants to come here because she doesn't know anything about Christian traditions, and she wants Sadie to have both experiences. That's going to be really sad for us because they have come, well, ever since Jonathan has lived in New York or San Francisco, he's always come home. That will be different. And I guess I'm not thinking about it yet.
Hanukkah is very close to Christmas. So we've celebrated Hanukkah with them here. And then they celebrate Christmas with us. We've had some good times that way. And yes, we will miss that opportunity.
We're talking with Mary Caroline and David Mitchell, a couple good supporters of NPR Illinois. We are in our year-end drive. They help make lots of good things happen here, and we'd like you to join them by going to nprillinois.org and making a donation or calling 206-9847. You were both mentioning Jonathan, and he has a tie to public radio, right?
He has a podcast, yes, that he puts together. And he calls it The Truth, but it's all fiction. And it's written, he's got a staff of good writers and performers that he puts the podcast together with. But now, because he can't have meetings in person, all the acting coaching is done on FaceTime, and they speak their parts and send it to him as a recording. And he puts it together with the music he creates. It sounds like they've done it live. That's what he's working with.
He did work on public radio with different radio shows all the time. And we were most proud the year that one of his pieces was on,
it was on Christmas
Eve on All Things Considered. It was about Santa's workshop.
The Mitchells, Mary Caroline and David on Community Voices. Hope you have a good holiday also. And you can support NPR Illinois by making a gift at nprillinois.org. or call 206-9847. If you've given already, thank you very much.